Hello, I trust you've looked over the various files on this website, or at least this page, and have a pretty good solid idea of what the safety information contained in there is all about. I will elaborate a little bit in this discussion, but mostly what this is to direct you through the experiment. The lamp socket that you're going to screw a 100-watt light bulb into to perform this experiment, the 100-watt light bulb acts as a kind of non-destructive fuse. Basically, if you short something out on the breadboard side of it, the worst that happens is the light bulb lights up. If you get a 100-watt light bulb and take your meter and connect to it, you'll discover that at least the 100-watt light bulbs I've seen, they seem to show about a 10-ohm resistance. 10 ohms and 120 volts is like 12 amps. It's like 1,400 watts of power. And obviously, a simple light bulb, the 100-watt light bulb, doesn't draw anywhere near 1,400 watts. That gives you some idea of the amount of resistance change that the filament goes from when it's cold to when it's hot. They in fact draw about 0.82 or 0.86 or something. I don't remember what the number was, but amps of current on the 110 when a 100-watt light bulb is running full brilliance. But of course you're not going to, at least you shouldn't be, trying to light the bulb. The bulb is basically acting as a kind of safety feature. It doesn't protect you from electrical shock. Understand that. It's not there for that purpose at all. It's there to prevent blowing up equipment if you accidentally get things connected the wrong way. I gave you instructions on how to, you know, mount this stuff down to a breadboard. I gave you an illustration that showed you at least one conceivable scheme. Basically, you be inventive here. When you know what piece of plywood it is that you have to work with, you know what the components are that you're going to anchor down to the board, so you plan your experiment out. I just gave you this as sort of a generalized idea. And you should mark the potentiometer, either the pot or the plywood board behind it, so that you know which direction to rotate it for highest resistance, and you know which terminal to connect to, because that affects which side of it is high resistance. Which direction you rotate it is affected by which terminal you're going to use. For the clip lead here, the top blue wire that has the two clip leads on it is currently connected to the capacitor. And in the diagram, that's referred to as C1. The first half of the experiment, you run this through the capacitor, and the second half of the experiment, you unclip that clip from the capacitor and connect it to the nail of that's holding that one terminal of the pot in that's closest to the nail head for the capacitor. I mean, there are lots of ways that you can do this stuff, but unfortunately, the fancy things that they have in electronic stores don't really get into how you wire up really crude stuff like this, and so the good old breadboard is a really solid approach, and it's cheap. You know, I mean, it's a little bit time-consuming to, you know, pre-treat the nails, but other than that, it works real well. The diode bridge that I show perched on top of four nails in a neat little cluster. They really do look like that. They're a little quarter-inch diameter, about, you know, sometimes a little larger than a quarter-inch, maybe 5/16, and they're about, you know, quarter-inch tall. Little round doohickeys. They also have much bigger ones that cost a lot more money. The important thing here is that you keep the voltage high enough that if you happen to go open terminal, it won't blow the poor thing up. They sell 50-volt ones. Don't use one of those. Although, in point of fact, this application won't stress the thing anywhere near that if you actually do it correctly. But in case that you didn't, it would be nice to know that it wouldn't destroy the part. I got a little plus sign marked on one corner if you look at it in the breadboard experiment version of this. Then there's another version that's a schematic diagram that has a little green box that says resistance or reactance versus resistance. What's inside that little module is just four diodes. It's no biggie. But they have to have some way to tell you which end is positive, and since it's four diodes configured, much as it is in the diagram, basically the positive is at one end, and the way those diodes are configured, the way they make these things, engineers don't go out of their way to make things hard. The positive is one end, the negative is at the opposite end, and the two AC terminals are the ones that are remaining, and of course it doesn't matter which one's which. In fact, you cannot even tell electrically one from the other. You measure the thing, and one is the same as the other. AC terminal is an AC terminal on these things. Okay, so you connect your meter across and set your meter to the current range. Now, this experiment, if it's carried out according to plan, I told you to get a 1.0 microfarad capacitor, and then I did say in the part list that you could go as high as 1.5, and the voltage doesn't matter. I said 600 volts. In fact, if you found a 1.5 microfarad cap that was 10,000 volts, it would probably work, although you'd have to put it underneath the table, and you'd probably have to have two men and a boy to carry it. But in point of fact, you need at least 250 working volts to be well within the safe zone. Safe zone here meaning that if you go too low on the voltage of the capacitor and you hit it with 120 volts AC, the peak voltages of that are 170 volt, and you don't really want to be right on the hairy edge because you could break down the dielectric and the device would short circuit inside. It wouldn't hurt anything, but it wouldn't be pleasant either. It might damage your meter if it happened to short. But I mean, it isn't an electrical safety problem. You connect your meter to directly to the diode bridge, and you set it to the DC range. If you actually are using a 1.0 microfarad, the 50 milliamp full scale range ought to do just fine. But if it turns out that you can't find the best you can get is a 1.5 microfarad capacitor, well then, you might have to go to the 250 milliamp range. The next range up is considerably higher, and you be the judge on that. At any rate, the other thing, of course, you had to get was a 3-watt or 5-watt potentiometer that was 3K, and I did say you could go with 3,500 ohm. For pots, yes, they do actually have 3,500 ohms as a standard for potentiometers, not for color code resistors, as I had mentioned earlier in this course. But you should have mounted this thing down, determined what surfaces are safe for you to touch, because you're going to need to touch the pot. And then the next thing, of course, is to have marked which is the high resistance direction to rotate the shaft. Okay, we will assume that you've turned the shaft all the way to the stop position, and you've chosen to use a terminal that when you connect that will give you the high resistance, the 3,000 ohms. At this point, you want somebody to watch you, just to make darn sure that there's somebody there to yank the plug out of the wall should something happen. And, of course, you run an extension cord to the table leg, like I described in the earlier audio. And you presumably have tested out your suicide cord and made sure that it doesn't live up to its name. You want to know that it's working properly, and then you connect it as shown here. I show a couple of wires coming in from the breadboard experiment drawing, a couple of wires coming in from the top, the upper right of the picture, from the suicide cord. One of them clips to the... Now, I showed it in red because that was the... I'm trying to use a limited color palette for those of you that don't have a lot of colors on your display. That actually, there is actually a gold terminal, or copper, actually, brass. I've got one of these things in front of me, actually. And the other one, the other terminal is sort of silvery looking, plated in zinc or something. Some of them are actually chrome plated. The significance of the color coding of those two terminals is rather interesting. If you look carefully at the device, you'll notice that the gold one has very little metal on it. It goes into the little Bakelite device, and it has a little contact that touches the very bottom, and that's the only part that it makes contact with the bottom of the bulb. The other thing, the white one, or the silver one, whatever you want to refer to it as, has lots of space on it, and it's got lots of metal, and that's the thing that fastens to the threads of the lamp. And it's interesting that they do that for a reason. When electricians wire these things up, these things are polarized. Not that AC really has polarity to it, but one side of your AC house current is actually connected to the neutral and to the ground. It's not carrying voltage, it's returning current back to the fuse box. And that is the wire that's connected to the silver terminal, or if you're an electrician, you use the white wire. There's the white and black are the two colors that are used in Romex, so that's the white wire, and the gold colored one is connected to the black wire, and the black wire is always the hot wire when you're dealing with residential wiring and that sort of thing. The green wire is electrical earth ground or safety ground, and so they actually color code these things, and I doubt very many of the people in the field that wire up houses have any clue as to what any of this is. So you're learning stuff that's probably way beyond what they're doing. You're already way past them, trust me. At any rate, so you screw this thing down to the board. We will assume that you screwed it down to the board. You don't want that thing flopping loose. And we'll also assume that the wires coming from the suicide cord, even though they're off the picture, are anchored down either with a nail or a screw, or somehow you fasten them down to the table in such a way that they're not going to just fall off if somebody happens to trip over the cord. And I've also laid this out in a way that everything looks kind of clean. You don't have a lot of clutter on this little breadboard. There's not shown on the breadboard experiment, the upper drawing, is the connection where the meter connects. It actually connects to the two nail heads that are on the little diode bridge that aren't really connected to anything in the picture. Okay, so you got all this stuff set up. Now, you've got a... You try... At all times, whenever you're working with live voltage, you try to make sure that there are three levels, three distinct separate layers of safety that have to be defeated before you can get nailed, okay? You try and remember that as you work with this stuff, and you'll probably be okay. The clip leads themselves have a little insulated booty. I've shown them here in yellow, or actually green, I guess. Comes of being colorblind, I guess. But anyway, they are yellow whenever you look at them, most of them. They make different colors. They make some black ones and white ones and other colors, but predominantly they seem to be yellow for some reason. At any rate, you make sure, okay, it is common for people that are doing experiments of this sort to actually unclip one of these and touch it momentarily to a contact that they know that they've selected, pre-selected ahead of time. They touch it momentarily just to see something happen, just to see a light bulb come on or something like that. You have to do that sort of thing. And it's nasty voltages that you're working with, and there really isn't any alternative to it. However, you never ever touch the metal when there is power going to this thing. And a suicide cord is actually a neat little gadget that will prevent an accident from becoming catastrophic. It won't stop you from being shocked, but as soon as you get shocked, the tendency is to let go of, or at least move, and your finger will slide off of the switch, and that will break the circuit for you. You don't want to rely on that. You never want to rely on that. But should something unexpected happen, something unforeseen, an example of something unforeseen is you've been soldering, and you don't realize that there's a little splat of solder that's making a bridge to the outside of the what should be insulated when you go to grab the thing, or something like that, and so now there's a conductive path to you. That said, in most cases, you still wouldn't get nailed, because, yeah, you would radiate a voltage, but there's no path to ground yet, so yet there's another layer of indirection. It's pretty hard, with these safety measures in place, to actually get nailed, and, of course, to have the final fallback, some independent person that's ready to pull a plug out should something go wrong, it's almost impossible to get hurt seriously. Oh, you'll wish you hadn't, but it's almost impossible to be fatal. You will find yourself in a situation where you want to undo the clip and clip it over to something else. I can't say this strongly enough. Don't disconnect the clip while the juice is applied. Unhook the clip while you've released the button on the suicide cord. Disconnect the clip. And if it is something important in the experiment that the clip needs to be connected, then holding the insulated portion of the clip lead, touch it to the thing that needs to be contacted, and then push the button on your suicide cord, and then, if you must, break the clip lead connection and then remake it just by moving it. You don't want to try and grab hold of it and squeeze it real hard, because something could slip, and then you'd end up touching bare metal, and that's not good. Okay, so I give you a little bit of a rough idea about doing, you know, treading forward in kind of mildly dangerous area, which you're not going to do for this experiment. You won't need to. Next thing I would suggest is that you screw in your 100 watt your light bulb, and you got the meter clipped on, so that it'll read current. Make sure that you pay attention to the polarity. Your diode bridge will have a plus mark on it, or sometimes they get really, really lame. They just put a little red dot on one of those, one of the corners where the leads come out. At which point you just, that red dot or that plus symbol is the positive connection, and the others are oriented as I've shown in the diagram below. The first half of the experiment, I've already shown it connected to the capacitor. I've also shown it in red. You wire it up that way, and you switch it on. And you should read current on your meter. If you've got the polarity right, the needle should swing forward as opposed to backward. If it goes the wrong way, then you didn't pay attention to the polarity. And you should read, in fact, about 45 milliamps. It might be as high as 48, might be as low as 43, but it should be somewhere in the range of 43 milliamps if you have a 1.0 microfarad capacitor. Okay, now, that's interesting in and of itself. Now the next trick is, now that you're sure that your circuit is working, One of the things that you can do is to provide a clip lead in place of the meter across the diodes and measure the voltage across the light bulb. If you were concerned about this, you would find it to be very low, almost non-existent, maybe on the order of a volt or something. I actually tested that, but I know it's going to be low. If you're really concerned about that, after you're sure that you've got the thing working, you can unscrew the light bulb and screw in a fuse, a little 3-amp fuse. Now, why did I say 3 amps? Well, it turns out I told you to use 0.6-amp fuses in your suicide cord. So if the device that you're connecting it to should short out and you've limited it to 3 amps, then likely the fuse that will blow is the one on the outside. You don't have to take apart your suicide cord again to repair it, because the fuses in there are inside. They're soldered in. Okay, well, having said that, that's for later. Power the thing up. You see about 45 milliamps. Fine. You let go of the button on the suicide cord. And handling only insulated material, even though the button is technically turned things off, you treat things as if they were live. In other words, you don't rely on that suicide cord to protect you. You treat it as if it were live, and you grab hold of the booty, the insulated boot on the clip lead on the capacitor, and unclip that from the nail that's holding the capacitor in place, and clip it over to the terminal that you've selected for the potentiometer, and have the potentiometer dialed up so that terminal to the sender terminal is the high resistance side. In this particular instance, you would have to rotate the shaft counterclockwise all the way to the stop if you were connecting it to the terminal that was nearest the capacitor. And we're just looking at the breadboard experiment up above. Okay, so R1 is turned to 3,000 ohms if it's a 3,000 ohm 3 watt pot. And when you connect the thing up, the way you do this, of course, is you clip it onto that terminal, as I discussed earlier. And, well, let's see here. I'll just punch in 120, enter, and 3,000 divide. And I get about 40 milliamps. So whenever you first switch the thing on, your meter should read approximately 40 milliamps, somewhere in that range. Don't expect it to be right on the button. The meter isn't accurate. The resistance of the pot isn't perfect. You know, it'll be approximately right. And again, like I said before in earlier experiments, sometimes tapping the frame of the meter will cause the needle to kind of settle out. Okay, so now, while it's running, you know, you push the button, and presumably you've tested, so you know that it's safe to touch the shaft of the pot while you adjust this. And don't turn it, whatever you do, don't just grab a hold of it and dial it all the way up. Because if you go to 0 ohms, with the power switched on, you will probably blow out your meter. So you only want to turn this up just enough so that the meter reads the same reading that it did when it was hooked to the capacitor. Okay? And with the power applied, don't spend too long. Don't worry about getting it exactly perfect. Just get it so that it's, you know, eyeball, you know, within a percent or two. And just in the time that you do that, I'll assume it took you 10 seconds. You might even notice that pot is starting to get warm. Now, if you leave the switch turned on with your finger on the pot, you'll notice that, you know, after about a minute, it's starting to get good and hot. Okay? Now, if you disconnect this after the pot has gotten hot and you're sure you have some feel for how quickly the temperature rises, remember, heat or temperature rise per unit time, heat is what happens whenever a resistor dissipates energy. When you put volts and when you put voltage across the resistor and you put, you know, current through it, you end up producing heat. A resistor will limit the current so that the meter doesn't read, you know, amps of current. It's reading, you know, a small amount of current, in this case 45 milliamps or so. But the resistor is taking the bulk of that energy. What comes out of the light socket is on the order of 120 volts, and it's coming down to just a fraction of a volt, providing a limited current to your meter, and that pot will get hot running like that. Okay, that's just the way resistors are. But when you connect it to the cap, I don't care if you run this thing for an hour. You won't notice any heat. The cap runs and delivers controlled current to the meter without overloading the meter. It will just sit there very nicely putting 45 milliamps to the meter. The reason that this happens is because a capacitor is a reactive element. It limits current because it has an X sub C. But it's limiting it in the imaginary plane. It's limiting it at a phase shift, a 90-degree angle phase shift. And because of this, what it's doing is it's taking some current from the generator, from the power utility. It's taking some current on part of the phase, and it's then dumping some of that current back. And the device, because it's just out of phase, rather than being a resistance, doesn't really dissipate any heat. So this becomes a really, really efficient way to build a little power supply that doesn't have to have a little current. The problem is that capacitors get really big if you try to do this, you know, and provide any sizable amount of current. But it's just all you want is just a few milliamps to run a little microprocessor device or something. This is a wonderful way to do it. And it does it efficiently. It doesn't waste any heat. And because there's no heat involved, the components last a long time. Whereas if you tried to do this with a resistor, not only would it be inefficient, but you'd have to figure out some way to keep the device cool, and it would age over time just because of the heat involved. So this is your notion of what resistance and what capacitance is. With this experiment, will show you in a very convincing way that resistance is not anything like capacitance. The two of them are limiting the current, and yet the capacitor doesn't dissipate any heat. It's pretty amazing. Now, of course, if you're really concerned about, well, he's hiding something here, I just know he is, I'll bet you the heat is inside the filament of that light bulb. Well, okay, fine, unscrew the light bulb and screw in a fuse. That's a 0 ohm resistance, and you'll find the same thing. It won't change anything. Though, it really is the fact that a capacitor is a reactive element, and a reactance, even though it will limit current, is a completely different animal than resistance is. Okay, well, that's really pretty much what the gist of this experiment was, and I hope to add some more stuff to this, but I think I got to stop the recording.